What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
Y'all already know what it is. Yeah, it's already too late. There's no escape. I'm here right in front of you. And you have to, you know what they're saying, when Diddy asks you to go shopping, you got to say no. Welcome, brothers and sisters, to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I just want to thank you all for pulling up. And as we get it popping, as y'all already know where to find us on Philly Fridays, this is Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. And you can also find us on the True Crime True Story Network, on your streaming networks all around. You know what I'm saying? So, as y'all can probably hear, I'm rustling through my notes because today is going to be an interesting joint. Some updates, things that was going on around the country. Some just desserts are taking place. You know what I'm saying? As we transition into our next segment on the show. Hold on, did that wrong. So, family, one of the things that happened this week, as you know, one of our beloved entertainers here in Philadelphia, brother by the name of PNB Rock, was gunned down in September of 2022. I'm just going to read the story to you. All right. And this is coming from the BBC Press. A father who sent his 17-year-old son to kill rapper PNB Rock has been sentenced to 31 years to life in prison. PNB, real name Rakim Hashim Allen, was shot dead in front of his girlfriend inside of a Los Angeles restaurant by a masked gunman. Now, the restaurant was part of the Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles franchise, and it was located in South Central Los Angeles, which for a lot of people, they said that was a pretty sketchy location. But, you know, man, I'm tired of these scuzz buckets, man. These scumbags, and, you know, I can't even get the words out, babe. I'm tired, man. I'm tired of the fact you should be able to eat wherever you want. You should be able to go wherever you want, as long as you ain't harming nobody, hurting anybody. And I'm tired of these lowlifes making life difficult for people who just want to live their lives. So this clown, his name is Freddie Trone, age 42, denied ordering his son to carry out the killing in September 22. And in his defense told a trial. The fuck? Okay, I'm trying to figure out how he had this written. His defense told the trial he was only an accessory after the crime, according to the Associated Press. But in August, he was found guilty of murder, 2-count second-degree robbery, and 1-count of conspiracy to commit robbery. The second defendant, Tremont Jones, was convicted of two counts of second-degree robbery, 1-count of conspiracy to commit robbery, and he was sentenced to 12 years in prison. Now, I believe Tremont Jones was the one that made the phone call to let this dude, Freddie Trone, know that PNB Rock was actually in the restaurant at that time. So, yeah, and the 17-year-old's trial, I'm not sure if the trial started yet for him, but you know what I'm saying? the fact that, you know, this brother was slain in such a tragic way, when, you know, he wasn't even out there. Like, you can talk about the drill rappers and things of that nature who lived that lifestyle. That wasn't this dude. He was hanging with his wife or his girlfriend and their child. You know what I'm saying? And it's just sad these days that you got to look out for people who claim to be you. And this is one of the most disturbing aspects of the black community, is that we create a lot of cover for people who do things and terrorize our communities. And I'm just not for it. I don't give a damn how cool you are with them. And I know a lot of low life cats. I know a lot of people that in my neighborhood and so forth. I ain't covering for none of these dudes. Are you kidding me? I'm a cover for them so they can continue to live the life they lead and terrorize the people that live in those very communities that they plunder about and wander and stalk on a day-to-day basis so that they can be comfortable. So let me just think about this for a second. You're out here making life miserable for everybody else, and we have to, you know, adopt this no snitching concept, or this no snitching rule, to protect you. But nobody is safe from you in the same neighborhood that everybody's supposed to protect you. Like, get the fuck out of here all the way. I'm just not with it. And a lot of y'all parents out here, parents, collaborators, y'all, a lot of y'all are out here right now just covering. Oh, that's my baby. You scared to go outside, but that's your baby. I'm just through with it all, man. I'm just through, sick of it. And, you know, we keep losing people. We're losing generations of people. You know what I'm saying? And it's senseless. It'd be different if there was a confrontation. There wasn't. And then to be a coward and send your son into the store to do it. You know what I'm saying? Come on. Anyway, so, you know what I'm saying? I hope that that this has brought some semblance of peace to the family of PNB Rock and all those who were connected to the brother. You know, he is one of our own Philadelphia, you know, a product of Philadelphia. So, you know what I'm saying? I just don't have the words right now for that type of stuff, man, for real. So, you know, other news, and accordingly, I believe that the Young Dolph case is wrapping up. And I hate the fact that we have the, you know, this whole, that we're dealing with this clown shit, you know what I'm saying? Because personally speaking, I just think that, like, once again, another senseless death. And the fact that, you know, you had three clowns that decided to pull up in a stolen, was it a stolen Lexus or was it a stolen Mercedes-Benz? And light up an entire storefront. Makita's Cookies. Like, it's a bakery out there in Memphis. And it's famous, black-owned and famous. One thing I will say about Memphis got a lot of black-owned business. Shout out to Memphis for that. You know what I'm saying? Memphis got a lot of black-owned businesses. Every time I'm going to Memphis, I've been able to link up with some black-owned business owners. But they shot up the fucking store. And all this is over words. Now, I understand that there was some street stuff going on there. But why do y'all Negroes become rich to do more ghetto shit? I'm still trying to figure that part out. You become rich, and then you become even more hood. You double down on the hood shit that you were supposedly, you know, the hunger and the thirst and the desire to produce the music and to produce the product that you put out there. And then y'all get caught up in this shit. Y'all get caught up in this. And I even heard like a rapper out in Cali one time talking about, when you come up, you're supposed to look out for your hood. You're supposed to, you know, send them guns and send them, you know, switches, and, you know, they call it pipes. You know, the gun is the pipe, right? And I'm thinking to myself, no, you're supposed to raise these cats up out of here so they don't have to live like that no more. It's just, I'm trying to put my finger on what we're missing. here. Because I understand a lot of times, and it's unfortunate in the black community, once somebody gets money, they feel like they don't have to listen to anybody else. They feel like that they're in a place of authority, and that the amount of zeros past the decimal sign, left of the decimal sign, it pretty much puts them in a place of leadership and authority. And these be some of the most ignorant cats on the planet. Don't know anything about community, how to operate and run community, how to move, none of that shit. So anyway, moving on. So yeah, man, apparently, you know, we're gonna be doing a lot. I'm gonna go over some clips, and the clips I'm starting with today, man, first and foremost, I want to tell everybody, man, this election cycle is a damn shame. As critical as it is in terms of the place we're in as a global society, this election is very important. I normally don't give too much credence to presidential elections because, typically speaking, the president's never really running the show, right? They had one wild card in the last, you know, since the Kennedy assassination, because JFK was a maverick. The mafia put him in there, and then he definitely went after the mob, him and his brother Robert. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? That thing imploded on them both, you know. But since then, you've had, you know, bought and paid for politicians who were given a script, they were given instructions, and they were told behind the scenes how to run the world. The only person that hasn't been is Donald Trump. He's always been sort of maverick, and one reason behind that is because he actually went into the White House as a billionaire, who, by the way, was not clicked in to the political elite that run all the neocons and the neoliberals that come together and run things that, you know, known as the black hand, or the people behind the screen, or the scene, or the deep state, as people call them. You know, so and listen, this is no endorsement for Trump. I need to make that plain, because I know a lot of y'all, the feebleness of you know, your pebble-sized brains don't allow you to see past that. I'm just stating the fact, you know. But Kamala is part of the establishment, and she's been establishment from day one. Ever since she was the side chick, wife chick to Downtown Willie Brown out there, you know what I'm saying? But I digress. The election itself is driving me crazy. I can't wait till the day after the election. I don't really care who wins. I'm just tired of the clown show, the circus tents popping up everywhere. And it popped up on CNN a little while ago. So I want y'all to pay attention to this back and forth.
Statistical dead heat.
Hold on. I want y'all to pay attention to this back and forth that happened on CNN a few days ago. I believe it might have been even last week, but, you know, I do a weekly show, so this is when you're going to hear it. So I want y'all to check this out.
You say that means that she's losing. I'm saying, for Donald Trump to have already been president once and coming back with the same reruns, Donald Trump is in a very vulnerable position.
Talk about rerun. Kamala's.
I will say Kamala's name anyway.
No, but you mispronounced her.
If I purposely mispronounce your name, that would not be appropriate.
Policies are Joe Biden's policies. She owns
you're
it.
Normalizing that
times.
Kind of viciousness, man.
33 times. But it's the disrespectful. She was the vice on Joe Biden's bill. We know.
Now, I want y'all to understand what's going on here. This is supposed to be a serious conversation, across the table conversation. You have, amongst other people, I don't know all the people that are sitting at the table, but I do know two. And one of the people is Dr. Michael Eric Dyson. And you have Congresswoman Nancy Mace. Nancy Mace is a white woman. Dr. Eric Dyson is a black man. That is very important for what's about to come. Now, you also are hearing the fact that their biggest point of contention is not necessarily about policy. It is about the pronunciation of Kamala Harris's name. Yeah. So this is what you're hearing right now. And this is what I'm talking about in terms of the circus tents that are being propped up everywhere. We have very important issues that need to be addressed right now. We have massive inflation, stagflation taking place, where the price of goods, services, and things we need to survive are going up, but the price and the cost, as well as the cost of living. But what you're given for a living in terms of salary, in terms of profit for businesses and things of that nature, has been stagnated. All right. And so we are struggling right now. We're in a struggle economy right now. In addition to that, there's a lot of global crisis going on that indirectly, directly affect American interests around the world. You have the war in Ukraine. You have the war in Palestine. You have all these different conflicts, not to mention all the wars that are going on in Africa, Mexico, and all these other places nobody's mentioning right now. So you have all this stuff going on in regards to that. And so the next president is going to be the one that set policy in terms of how these things are going to be addressed. What adjustments need to be made? They are supposed to be the tip of the spear when it comes to addressing these matters. And this is the shit we're talking about right here. These people are losing their shit over the fact that Nancy Mace, who is trolling, by the way, I'm no mistaken about it. She's trolling, by the way. And there's a reason for this, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. But and Nancy Mace is also a Republican, so I just want to put that out there. So they're having this cross table conversation with Democratic leaders and all this other stuff. Cross table. That's what's happening right here. But just pay attention.
Let
me just say this, because this congresswoman is a wonderful human being. But when you disrespect Kamala Harris by saying you will call her whatever you want, I know you don't intend it to be that way. That's the history and legacy of white disregard for the humanity of black people.
So now you're calling me racist.
I just said you weren't a racist.
That is complete.
No, you don't have to intend racism to accomplish
it. No. You are intending that
your disrespect
racist,
of Kamala Harris is part and parcel of a tradition of disrespect.
Congresswoman, why can't you just?
I'm not calling you a racist. I'm saying what the practice is.
You are. You are.
Why can't you just the
prior way I'm saying?
Disrespecting. No, what's disgusting is your disrespect of her,
Professor.
This gentleman said, "I didn't know her name."
You know what's disgusting to women is her disrespect of women. She doesn't know what a woman is. And if 25 years ago,
white women don't have the ability to tell black women who paid the price of blood to make this country what it is to tell them they're not real women.
25 years ago,
they care for your babies.
25 years ago, I became the first woman to graduate from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina.
And I'm not going to, like, I'm going to stop it right there. But and y'all see what the conversation was about. And I don't know who the brother was that was in the back yelling like a little, like an injured hyena. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God. I don't do whining men. All right. Whining men, you motherfuckers can go somewhere. Listen.
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
Like, dude was in there crying and whining. And so I just wanted y'all to hear that back and forth between Nancy Mace and Michael Eric Dyson. So I want you to hear this very next. I believe it might have even been the very next day. There is the House Oversight Committee, and they're holding a hearing on the Biden-Harris administration's policy failures. All right. I want y'all to pay attention to this, because this is, you hear for yourself.
Chair recognizes the gentlelady from South Carolina, Ms. Mace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, that is Nancy Mace from South Carolina. Well,
my colleagues across the aisle said that those that cannot pronounce Kamala's name correctly are elementary-aged children. I would like to enter into the record an article by Newsweek saying Bill Clinton pronounces Kamala Harris' name wrong during DNC speech. Bill Clinton, along with Al Sharpton, rapper Lil Jon, let's not forget that Joe Biden can't say her name right, neither can Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and this morning on Morning Joe, Joan Baez called her a camel. So I don't want to hear it. It's fake outrage. I would like to also enter into the record a screenshot of a text message I received from the esteemed professor from Vanderbilt, Michael Eric Dyson, after my CNN interview, begged me for photos. In this text, he says, after calling me a racist on CNN, shh, don't tell anybody, we look good together, and sent me a kissy emoji.
Without objection.
Jesus Christ.
You want to talk about
got him? We fucking got him.
That hot damn. So what y'all just heard was the fact that Nancy Mace had apparently after that exchange, there was some pictures that were taken, right? Afterwards. So let me read you the screenshot that Nancy Mace presented on the Oversight Committee, at the Oversight Committee, all right? It was a picture of her and Michael Eric Dyson, you know, there, you know, and he has his hand around her waist, and they're very close together. I would imagine her hand is covering his back. And this is what he says. Shh. Don't tell anybody. We look good together. Crying laughing emoji. Heart kiss emoji. She goes, ha, 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 ha. His response, well, your gorgeousness makes the photo, get this, your gorgeousness makes the photo, so there's that. So you can only imagine the next day, Michael Eric Dyson is going on his tour saying,
what more do you want from me?
And normally I give a brother a break, but you are a married black man who considers themselves to be a champion of black women. You have consistently criticized black men for not being supporters of black women. You have been spewing your vitriol towards black men, doing your eloquent soliloquies for, you know, pontificating points, utilizing verbal gymnastics and skillful dialogue and in terms of being able to speak. But at the same time, brother, you got caught with, you know what I'm saying, with your tail in between your legs. And Nancy Mace, you didn't expect that woman. You thought you were smarter than that woman. You didn't expect that white woman to do what white women do.
Flawless victory.
So he went on The View, and I'm not even going to talk about what happened on The View because that was utter gutter shit. And I know I'm cussing a lot tonight. I'm tired, and I have had some problems with my computer, so bear with me, family. But you know, it's just ironic to me, the irony, right, that this champion of black men is sliding into the DMs of a white woman who, by the way, I mean I'm looking at Nancy Mace right now. I don't see the allure or the attraction to the point where he's calling her gorgeous. All right, she's not a bad looking woman. I would never, you know, I'm not going to say she's a bad looking woman, but this is a little over the top for a married man. I mean, goddamn, you gazed into those baby blue eyes and you were just ready to risk it all, brother. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what in the world were you thinking, bruh? So now you got me on the apology tour without actually owning up to anything. And I think it's very, you know, I think it's very interesting. It's very rich, the fact that you have come out to defend yourself, but you have yet to apologize to the one person who probably deserves it the most, your wife, Negro. Because that's the one person you truly embarrassed. Now, I don't give a damn if you personally apologize to her. You embarrassed this woman on a global stage. That Senate, that oversight committee, that the hearing that was taking place, this is seen globally. I'm looking on Forbes website right now on their YouTube page. That's where we're playing this clip from. And this is Forbes break. Forbes is international, fam. The View is international, fam. Why didn't you apologize to your wife? We don't tolerate.
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
Fam, you are out here. Bruh, I hope you were sleeping on the couch. For real. And I would normally give you a little grace, like I said before, but you have been quite the little misandrist, brother, doctor, in terms of tearing down black men for not doing, for doing what you just did. So, anyway, I digress. And then we, you know, we're going to get into it for the fact because, you know, now we got everybody out here talking about how we're going to cancel an icon who I personally watched grow up. I grew up with her, you know, and that's the one, the only and lovely, you know, Janet Jackson. You know what I'm saying? Who, you know what I'm saying? Hold on, we got to do that. Because I honestly don't get how, you know, it was a baited reporter. It was a baited story from a person of Asian Indian descent who asked Janet Jackson during an interview, what would it be like to, how great would it be to be and living in times where you're going to have a black female president or black woman as a president. And Janet Jackson has just asked the question. She said, well, is she black? And she said, well, I heard that her father was white. Now, you got everybody out here jumping down Janet's throat and talking about how stupid she is, this, that, and the other. And this is just the fickle nature of how easy it is to control black people and their thinking and so forth. A brother came to me the other day because I posted on Facebook that I'm with her, and it was a picture of Janet Jackson. We have watched Janet Jackson grow up. We've seen her as Penny on Good Times. We have watched her perform, become this icon who, you know, she couldn't rock with her brother Mike, but she rose above the level of the other entertainers in her family. She was number two. You know what I'm saying? So, and that Jackson family, that black family, now they might have had their issues, but God damn it, we can't deny that they were black. And so, you know what I'm saying? People are out here taking shots at her, taking shots at Michael. And I just find that, you know, it's just really low vibrating energy and low vibrating, like low wave thinking, low hanging fruit type of living that people are actually able to do to come for her, for a chick that y'all really don't know anything about. Don't know nobody know about no damn Kamala, Kamala, whatever the hell her name is pronounced. Don't nobody know about her. She's a puzzle. You know the one person that really could have answered this question? How about Kamala Harris? Instead, so everything she did up until the meeting that she had with the Black Nationalists, what is it, the National Association of Black Journalists here in Philadelphia, when she finally said she was black, and God damn it, you know, you can tell how it was staged for her to say that. It was set up for her to say that, because previous times she was asked that question, she's evaded the answer. I'm just not going to deal with that. That type of stuff leads to division and so forth. And we as the people got to stop allowing people to divide us. Donald Trump put that crap out there. Donald Trump wasn't the first person to talk about that. In fact, she was. Showing up on TV shows with, what's the chick named? The Mindy chick. Talking about how they share Indian heritage and things of that nature. She was the one that started all that stuff. And it didn't help her when asked what would she do for black people in reparations. And her response was, I'm not going to do something that just benefit black people. No. So I don't get why black people pander for people who don't offer us a damn thing. We're the only people in the world that don't see politics as a transactional relationship. This is a relationship of pimps and hoes. And I don't need to tell y'all which ones are the hoes. It's infuriating to me. The fact that y'all is just like timid and scared. The Democrats came out in 2016 here in Philadelphia. Y'all all know what they said. Neither one of these parties are doing shit for us. So why is it? The Democrats, and I'm going to go over it again. 2016, they were told not to offer black people anything. They were told to. Their strategy was just tell them, we hear you. And black people will be satisfied with being heard. So, you know, excuse me. It's mind-boggling to me. And it's funny because Donald Trump said that when he ran in 2016, he said the Democrats haven't done anything for y'all. So what do you have to lose by coming over here? Add to the Republicans. Now, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I'll never vote for Donald Trump. But he made a good point. And you motherfuckers be all up in y'all feelings so much that y'all can't even acknowledge the fact that so just tell me what Democrats have done for you. Tell me, Democrats have been running black cities for the last 60 years. What the hell have black cities profited from their relationship with the Democratic Party? Dr. Claude Anderson tried to set up Africatown in Detroit back in the 90s and the early 2000s. Dr. Claude Anderson. Powernomics, Dr. Claude Anderson. Right? The man who drafted the first affirmative action bill in Florida, Dr. Claude Anderson. You know what those Negroes who ran city council said? We don't want to appear racist. In a town that had 800,000 black people in. Detroit had the greatest concentration per capita of black people of any city in America. The only city that had more of a bigger concentration at that time was Chicago. But Chicago was like four times bigger than Detroit at the time. I believe it was like 8 out of the 11 council persons that was, you know, in there, and they didn't get the vote. He was going to build it in the black community, the black part of town, the town that had started to see the most erosion after the factories had left Detroit, after all the auto dealers decided to pick up and take their shot, take their ball and go overseas with it. See, but then, you know, you can have the all these other places. You can have Chinatown, all right, Koreatown, all right. You can have Little Havana, right? But you can't have a space where black people can congregate and do commerce. Business. And this is why I don't trust none of these politicians, because at the end of the day, they're all in somebody's back pocket. Y'all saw what happened out there in California, where they killed the bill. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, did his 11 o'clock adjustments. He went his 11 o'clock adjustments to the bill that would have created what is it? They would have created an oversight committee that would have had some elected power, government, state power, to ensure that the payments and the policies would be put in place. And the so-called Black Caucus of the state representatives, they. A Republican, by the way, brought the bill to the floor. None of them would second the notion so that they can actually vote on the bill. None of them. None of those cowards. If Gavin Newsom wanted to veto the bill, make his ass do it in front of everybody. This is a man who has aspirations to be president in the next 5 years. See, I keep telling y'all, stop playing with me. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. They call me the professor for a reason. I just speak in layman's terms to make sure you all understand what I'm talking about. I don't want to over talk over your head. I want to drive the point home. So all you have to do is be just a little bit smarter than a fifth grader, and you can understand what I'm saying to you. Now, we do have time to shift into some of the other things. I want to go over some of the other clips, but before I do, I want to take a moment of silence, and I want to pay homage and respects to a dear sister of mine who was part of the grassroots movement here in Philadelphia. This sister had, you know, started urban farming. She was good with making elixirs. This sister was part of the urban farming community, as well as a lot of things that we did in terms of building. She was well known in Philadelphia, and it just really breaks my heart to know that we lost our sister in her sleep on Wednesday evening. It could have even been Tuesday. I was notified on Wednesday, so it may have been Tuesday going into Wednesday. So, heartfelt condolences to the friends and family of our good sister, Niambi Royster. And, you know, you will be missed, sister. You will be missed. And, you know, I just wanted to do that before. I didn't want to go too far in the program and not pay reverence to my good sister. May the ancestors receive you as you transition. As you know, in African culture, we don't die, we transition to the next realm. And the next realm is the spiritual realm. So hopefully, you know, she may transition safely. And, you know, we will continue to do work in your memory, sister. So just wanted to do that real quick. Let's see. Yeah, you know, so let's get back to it, y'all. So I want to go over some videos, man. And I want to talk about this video. I want to talk about real quick, because as we talk about the stuff in the black community, I want us to address these matters. So once I do have to pause the music one more time, I want us to address these matters. So I want y'all to listen to what this brother's saying, and I'm going to speak to the validation of this point. So hold tight.
Do you know why a lot of black females don't support their black husbands in businesses? Let me tell you this today, because many of them, they are in competition with their husbands. They don't see the business within the family as a united formation to empower the family financially. And I know all of you as women seated in here are probably saying, you know what, Rick, but we do support our husbands. They're not transparent. They're not this is. No, no, no. If you look at Muslim women, Indian women, and you look at white women, majority of them that you come across are either a clerk in their husband's business, or they are either in the finance side of their husband's business. But you can't, because the reason for that, you are in competition with them. You are literally at loggerheads with them. You are literally putting him as an equal to you when it comes to competition. If you can't submit to the vision of that man, you were never meant to marry that particular man. And that is why you are a thorn to him, as opposed to being a black.
And I want to point out, I want to address that too, right? Because I think that's a very important concept, because like I said before, man, I was just talking earlier about how black people just can't get it together. And then I had an epiphany about certain things, right? So I'm going to get into that epiphany in 2 seconds. But the gentleman was saying is that black women see themselves as competition to black men. And then I thought about this meme that had been passed around a few years back. And when I describe it, all of you will know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's a meme in which you have a white man in a business suit, and he is on a racetrack with a black woman who is in her athletic apparel. Now, the white man just has two hurdles to cross and he'll get to the finish line. Meanwhile, the black woman has a ball and chain tied to her ankle. She has all sorts of barbed wire, a moat with an alligator in it, and a brick wall, and then a wall of armor in between her, you know, jagged armor in between her and the goal. And the caption is, "What's the matter? It's the same distance." And this is something that a sister had put together because she was saying this is the perfect illustration of the difference in the startup journey between the black female founders and white male founders. And I find it rich that why do you think that you're going to compete against men of other of another community? They don't take you seriously enough. This is one of the reasons why black women are promoted often to middle management jobs in most corporations or most associations and things of that nature, because they're not seen as a threat to the white dominant male establishment. They're just not seen as such. Black men, if you're masculine black men, you're not even, you don't even get past the interview stage. That's why the brother that was just on that CNN talk show was talking so nasally and talking like he was, he couldn't help himself and he wanted the world to feel his emotion and his passion. You know, those are the only brothers that actually seem to rise. The brothers that have been robbed of, the brothers that seem to function from a place of emasculation. But the important part about this picture, right, is that why are black women trying to compete with white men? That's you know, and you can talk about gender roles, this, that, and the other, but it makes you, then you start to assume masculine roles. See, now it's not about the world being so hard on you and you have to defend yourself because nobody's out there to defend you. You're actually choosing to engage in a battle in which you have to become a gladiator, and it's cutthroat and it's vicious and it's blood sport, and you're choosing to enter this arena to prove a point to who? And it takes me back to a place, because I remember taking a sister, I was dealing with a sister recently, I won't say recently, about a year ago, and I know her story. She didn't have a relationship with her mother. I think I'm not sure if her mother's in the picture, if her mother had died, but she didn't have a relationship with her mother, but she had a relationship with her father, and it was, you know, touch and go. But she was more so the dominant person in that relationship, and ironically, she was actually dating a guy when we went out. But he told her to go out there and see the world and see if you like what you see out there. Okay, all right, whatever. And typically, I don't even indulge in shit like this. But, you know, sisters, y'all are good at minimalizing your connections to other men when you find somebody you like. And she liked me, like, really. Like, the conversations we would have, I've never heard a woman describe her infatuation with a person that way. Right? So... But the bottom line is, when we were in the car, you know, and then we were just out in public, she was just bubbly, you know, smiling and giggling. And she just, it's like the inner girl, the inner feminine was breaching this tough masculine, you know, exterior that she had put on. It was breaking through the shield and the armor, and it made her feel so uncomfortable. It made her feel so uncomfortable. Because she liked feeling like she liked being in her masculine energy. So when I hear women talk about when the man is in his masculine energy, it'll allow her to be feminine. Y'all don't even want to be that. Y'all prefer to be masculine, sisters. I mean, y'all prefer that. And you try to excuse it. We had to. I'm trying to hear that shit. I've seen feminine women who have been through some things, and they're still feminine. They may have their issues and traumas they still have to address, but they have been through some things. And it takes me to the fact that the epiphany I had, that, and it's not just my epiphany, it's been one that I've heard, but I'm convinced of it now. The only reason black people were able to build black Wall Streets and black people were able to build up and coming towns, it was because you didn't have a choice. Jim Crow, you know, Reconstruction, you know, the Civil Rights Movement, those was when, like, the outward, like, the war was right in front of you. It's much more covert now. So black people actually feel like they have a choice. And most black people don't feel like they have to. Most black people don't feel like they even want to build with each other. Most black people want to actually become part of the melting pot. Most black people would just be comfortable assimilating into American culture, which by proxy is basically the dissolving of your connection to your blackness. But even still, you still have the stain of being black in those communities. And when they see you, they don't not they can't not see your blackness. And so when you go in there and you get comfortable, they remind you,
I don't want peace, I want problems always.
And many of y'all, when you finally get to that place, then all of a sudden you start to reminisce and you start to remember, oh yeah, I am black. Oh, and I need my black family and friends, because my Negro wake up call, the alarm just went off. The alarm just went off. And it was you looked in your phone, it was the Negro wake up call. That's the buzz that you've been hearing. And so, you know, I'm hoping some way, somehow we'll get to a place where we recognize that, because, you know, there's another, like, and I'm a rock this video for a second. Y'all really need to hear this, because, let me see. This is why I know that black people are going to struggle to the end of the time, because black men love black women, but sisters, y'all don't like us. You might love your son, sort of, but you don't like us. And I'm gonna prove it to you. I've been saying that she don't like you, fam. And like, people I know personally, like, damn, I can't believe how accurate that analogy is. Let me show y'all. Hold on. Let me play this video real quick. Now remember back in where was it? Hold on. I got it right here. It was a few years ago, right, where a black woman by the name of Rhoda Osmond claimed that she was hanging out in a club outside in Houston, but it was like Little Haiti, part of Houston. And when she was outside that club, then some man, some stranger, just walked up to her and busted upside her head with a brick. She then went on to command $40,000 in a GoFundMe. Meanwhile, black men's reputation took a hit, only to find out that she was running a scam, that there was an actual video of what took place. And she was then arrested for illegally scamming people of $40,000. But listen to this now, because black men took a hit on this one. By all of you anti-black male misandrists who could not wait to take a shot at black men. So just listen.
One thing that I've noticed, or a common thing that I've noticed in the videos that I've made covering the situation, so many brothers in the comment section, especially when it was found out that Houston PD and the FBI were looking for Rhoda, a lot of brothers said that they wanted an apology from all the women who talk trash, all the women who call black men names and stuff like that. Fellas, hear me out when I say this wholeheartedly. I don't think y'all are going to get an apology.
Bruh.
Yo, what's going on, everyone? This is your man, Brandon Geo, one half of Residual Impact. And yo, check it. In the previous video I did covering this topic, I talked about how some of the brothers in my comments in previous videos that I've done on this topic have talked about how they wanted an apology from women for everything that they put them through regarding this situation. And y'all know what I'm talking about, so I don't have to go into it any further. But So many brothers talked about how they wanted an apology from women regarding this Britgate situation.
I need to see all those apologies ASAP. I need to see those apologies ASAP. All those creators, all those people that you guys made videos on, that you guys called out, said, oh, we was wrong, they was wooty wooty woo. I'm so happy I stayed quiet and just reported on facts until this information came out. I'm waiting for all the creators that were bashing black men. Black man ain't shit. Black man ain't that. When y'all get shot by the police next time, we ain't gonna do this. And y'all are bullet bags and all this and that. What y'all gonna say? I know you're not gonna apologize. I know you're not gonna retract anything, because it's accountability. It's kryptonite.
Where the apology at? Where's the apology for being wrong yet again? As if we didn't learn from Carly Russell. We're wrong again. Again, like survey says, wrong again. Where's the apology for blaming all men?
And I strongly feel like y'all not gonna get it. I'm content with that. And I'm not looking for one, to be honest.
Because he's already accepted what we already know. That black women do not see black men from a loving place. Because if there was a loving relationship, the whole community would have been flooded with apologies. Flooded with apologies. But we all know, when it comes to the brothers,
I'm done with life, and it's all Jermaine's fault. It's always Jermaine's fault. I'm done.
And we know this. We know this. But a lot of brothers still keep coming back. That's why there's so many brothers talking about Passport Bros or sellouts, because they're turning their backs on black women. But when you ask them about how they're being treated by sisters, the first thing they say is the reason why the sisters are acting the way they are is because of something the men are doing. But not painting. Listen, there are some scum buckets out there, but these are the ones that women are choosing. And many women have even come forward to acknowledge the fact that they are very flawed in choosing the men that they like. And you know the funny part about that, too? I've had women say to me, I want to deal with you, but just not right now, and I'm not ready yet. And for the longest, I didn't know what that meant. But then it finally came to me. It clicked. Like, you know how the light bulb goes off in your head, and it's like, hold on. Or turns on, and you're like, hold on. She wanted to continue to get her freak on out there. See, I was the man that represented, for certain women, I was the man that represented the responsible brother, the caretaker, the one that is the protector and the provider, the one that can run and operate a family unit. But the man that she desired, and I've heard black women recently talking about this, their first priority is, you know what I'm saying, Mr. Goodbar. You know, the man running pipe, the plumber. That's the first priority in choosing the men. But they want other men to help them raise the men of the children of those other men. And this is why I don't do the whole baby mama thing. As a matter of fact, because I'm going to play on the way out, on our way out. Hold on. There's another video. Hold up. No, this isn't it. There's another video I'm going to play. We only have a few minutes to go. But I'm going to play this other video because, oh yeah, here it is right here. So I want y'all to hear this. This is why we tell men, don't be that guy. Do not be that guy. This is why we tell brothers, don't be that guy. Hold on.
But you don't have to tell her anything. That's the whole point. You don't have to tell her nothing.
So if I see her doing something, you just say,
you're dealing with me. You mess with me, I mess with you. You don't mess with my kids. Okay, that's not the relationship we got. You here for me. Don't say shit. She got that. You ain't gonna say shit to her. You ain't gonna say nothing to her.
Life is trying to be a daddy.
What are you talking about? You ain't gonna get it. Don't tell her nothing yet.
I was trying to get her not to disrespect you. You told me to do something.
I don't have you to come in here to talk to me. I'm not asking for them to have a father figure. That's not what I'm asking.
I'm not trying to be no father figure.
What?
That's how I feel.
I already told him that your daddy already know what's going on.
Oh, man, you gonna listen now. That bust on.
Listen, what the hell you mean to bust a man? That's my baby daddy. What are you talking?
Now, I want you to understand, this man is living with this woman, and apparently he moved in with her, which is already a no-no. You don't even come, bro. All right. And then secondly, in addition to moving in with her, she has a teenage daughter. a teenage daughter who's about the same size as she is. And apparently the young lady has been flipping with the mouth. And I'll tell brothers from the gate, man, from just even from my experiences, don't deal with women with teenage girls. Teenage girls, preteen girls is the dangerous situation to put yourself into. And what typically happens is, prior to your relationship with her and her daughter wants nothing to do with her. Her daughter wants to live her own life. Her daughter wants to explore her independence. The second you come in there, they start, oh, I just miss time with the time where we would, you know, we never have mommy daughter time anymore. And you're always out with him. And, you know, and when you emphasize him like that, brother, that is a fucking problem. And it can become something. And I dated a woman who had a teenage child, a teenage girl, a daughter. And the daughter was sexually active. The daughter was 17 years old, 18. But she would walk around the house and nothing more than those Daisy Duke boy shorts and a sports bra. And this girl had, like, I didn't, like, I would never look. I was like, look away, this, that, and the other. But her mother would be like, you walking around here with these D size, these D cup titties out here. And you know, and I'm like, oh, God. And it's like, the mothers don't seem to have any control over what happens in that particular situation. But they seem to be okay with it because they got the best of both worlds. They got you there. And I've talked about it before. Women don't really give a damn about the, like, most women don't really care about the danger and the jeopardy they put you in, as long as they can get what they want out of you. Because at the end of the day, brother, you are replaceable, and you need to recognize that, especially in the eyes of black women. Somebody got to say it. And you say, no, it ain't true. Okay, man, let's go through your dating history and identify, you know, the men that you threw away, or the men that were expendable, or the times when you knew you had a crazy baby father, but you still wanted to date this dude stalking you, waiting outside, sleeping in his car outside your house, and you want to invite men over. Oh, he ain't going to do nothing, is the most famous words right before some tragic shit occurs, in which she's sitting there crying at your funeral while everybody's trying to figure out what happened. She knows exactly what happened, but she's tight-lipped because she still has more loyalty to him than she did to you. You heard what this woman said. That's my baby. Don't you talk. Don't you be disrespecting my baby daddy. She talking like that. She probably still seeing her baby daddy. So, you know, listen, man. And y'all lucky, because I was looking for it, but I ain't have time to put it together, man. Like I said, I had some shifty stuff happen. It's been a lot of freaky stuff. People have been trying to log into my Facebook account. Brother of mine had his YouTube channel hijacked. Another brother had people trying to hijack his Google account. So, like, you know, the Google account seemed to be where people are trying to get in where they fit in. But, you know what I'm saying? So something jinky, my whole shit shut down right before I jumped on here. Cause I was gonna put it on there. I was gonna get it, cause I know some of you cats out there, especially you lame ass dudes, out there talking about, you just keep fucking with me and fucking with me and fucking with me. And I ain't even thinking about y'all, I'll be honest with you. Oh, just get on with your life. But keep coming back. You know what I'm saying? You know, we keep serving them up. So, you know what I mean? You line them up, I knock them down. That's how we do it out here. But, you know, until then, man, I want to thank y'all all for tuning in to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. And as I always say, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And I am out of here.